It's Wednesday, October 15th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 119 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 51 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and I want to apologize in advance for the fact that for this week and probably the next week as well, because we're recording a couple episodes here today since we have John in town.
Hooray!
The bedroom voice has become the bathroom voice because the one constant in the universe is Murphy's Law. It's not like the speed of light or anything. It's Murphy's Law. And the weekend we have John and
Speed of light isn't constant.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
I do know that. That's why I said it's not one of the constants in the universe.
That's
but
good.
The point being,
nerds!
It would figure that the one weekend John's in, we plan to record two regular and one bonus episode while he's here, and I develop moderate laryngitis. So there's nothing I can do about that, and we can't really put this off. So
I can understand what you're saying. You don't need to seduce the microphone for every single episode.
If we could only get Chad to develop that laryngitis once in a while.
No, Chad's voice I'll just break through.
It's plenty
just
obnoxious already.
Yes.
All right, we'll go ahead and come on, you jerk-offs, introduce yourselves.
I'm Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Hey,
hi,
how
Pat.
You guys doing?
I'm great. I'm John, and I'm in St. Louis.
I'm Chad, and I have nothing witty to say at this moment.
Okay, fantastic. We have a couple announcements, and I'm going to be real rapid-fire with these because
Warhammer Online!
Yeah, one is the Warhammer Online Guild.
Check. I'm going to join the Guild. Actually, by the time this drops, I'll probably already be in it. So,
yeah.
Hi, Guildies. Awesome.
I just gave John a tour. He loved it, so he's going to be joining us.
We are seriously recruiting at least almost one person every day.
Check the show notes
it's
if
amazing.
You want to catch up with us. Order Mortar side, we'd love to have you. Secondly, Worldwide Wing Night 5, once again, that's Saturday, November 8th. Check the show notes for details. It looks like I will be in St. Louis. Now,
you're such a tease. You
well,
know that.
Hold on. I can't give the
it's
details
a
yet.
Prerogative.
I yes. can't give the details yet because I don't have them.
His hair qualifies.
But I am still going to Seattle probably a week or two thereafter. And right now,
good riddance.
I am talking to Tex and Ed Healy and a couple other guys in the area about putting something different together in Seattle later. So,
And what's that? That's another tease.
That's because I don't have the details to give.
He'll make the details.
Yes.
All right. The email addresses are back up. When I migrated the site, none of the email addresses made it over. They're now all back. So you can email any of the first names, Dan, Pat, John, Chad, Tex, or Chris at feartheboot.com. You can also go to, there's a contact page off feartheboot.com that has that in a drop down list. Last one, once again, I want to keep this real quick so we can get into the meat of the show. We are ending the GM profiles. We've gotten quite a few. If you still want to send in a GM profile, 5 minutes or less in an MP3, email it to feartheboot@gmail.com. You have from now until the time when the next episode, when episode 120 drops, this is 119, when 120 drops, that's the cutoff. So this is your last week to get that entry in.
Have we got anything crazy?
Like, just wild,
like some
GM?
Guy from Madagascar, or an astronaut, or a woman,
a
or,
Tibetan,
you know,
Buddhist who does, like,
get
some web,
you know,
role-playing thing.
I would hate to commit to anything, because if I said, yeah, we got this or that, and then didn't include it in the episode.
Okay, that's fair.
John, I'm going to give you an opportunity here to speak out. You said you listened to 118. Do you remember how you were brought up at the end of the episode?
No, I didn't finish it. How was I brought up? Okay, this is how it worked.
You're such
I
a
listened
man.
To it this morning going out the door to get to your house on time. Ironically, I was early and I had time to finish it. But I took a shower during the episode and I just let it play through because I thought that counts.
Yes, but yes, it does. It totally counts.
Okay, well, at the end of the episode, we were talking about those super archetypes.
Yes.
The archetype beyond the archetype.
I was streaming my own archetype into the monitor. And
well,
I figured that's what listening is like.
We pegged you with one.
What is it?
Self-destructive.
Yeah, I was actually going to make a comment about the Warhammer wizards, about how they can blow themselves up and how I love that. But you cut me off too quick. That would have been a perfect segue.
The thing that we were wondering about, though, is typically that super archetype says something about the individual. For example, I'm very protective and loyal in real life, and as a result, I play protective and loyal characters. We talked about a woman who's very motherly, and as a result...
And Dan plays that, too.
Yeah, and as a result, I always play a mother.
Was it Dawn?
No, it was a...
No, a friend of ours, you never...
Dawn kind of plays a protector herself, but it's a different one than Dan's.
Yeah.
So, what we were trying to figure out
is Where am I and how am I, if so,
self-destructive
in real life?
Why does that, why, well, why is that a constant, why is failure a constant theme?
It's not because success is a constant theme in your normal life.
Well, aside from that.
Oh, here we go.
But I didn't say it. Thank you, Chet. But and I don't actually believe that. Success is the opposite.
You can believe it right now because you're wearing what you're calling your Winston Churchill vestment.
This is my vestment. Yeah. Yes. Chad got me this promo t-shirt from one of his IP deals, and it's got Churchill on it doing his little
scissors. We call that IT, but that's okay.
I said IT.
You said IP.
Oh, whatever.
But maybe you do P. I don't know. I don't judge.
That's intellectual property and lawyer talk. Oh, I'm learning important acronyms. Thank
you. Got you.
But no, I'm not self-destructive, you know, really. When I am, it's the fun kind, so that's okay. I think in gaming, it manifests because I like to win despite being a believably loser-ish character.
It's the underdog. It's the attraction.
It's kind of the underdog. It's an oblique sort of hero. It's not totally an underdog. Like the Mud character that I always go back to. He was a fat-ass bureaucrat in a world full of sword-swinging heroes and big busted maidens and all that stuff. The hero angle, the escape was being the politician who had it all worked out in his head and who was moving strings real slow, real imperceptible-like, and was getting it all together.
Until a massive heart attack killed
him. Until the heart attack killed him, yeah. That sucks. He's coming back as a lich, though.
Oh, is he?
When they release Necromancers. That's my goal with them.
Oh, yeah, but how far off is that?
Well, that's the thing. Simutronics has been saying they're going to put Necromancers out in Dragon Realms literally for 5 or 6 years now. So my goal is Erwin comes back when they come out.
Oh, so you're kind of holding the gun to them
now,
huh?
Yeah, I'm holding out. They're not getting any more action from me.
Mm, wow.
Yeah, I'm putting demands.
In my own life, I've decided to come out of 1995.
Whoa!
I went out this week, actually. Oh.
And bought a game from 1995?
You know, actually, this brings up what probably is really the biggest announcement, and I can't believe I didn't have this on my list. So I was out signing the contract for Fear the Con 2.
Excellent.
Let's talk about that for a second. March 6th and 7th, that's a Friday and Saturday,
very nice,
in the year 2009, we will be going...
In the year 2009.
When dinosaurs still threatened the
world. When dinosaurs ruled the earth.
But in the year 2009, with our jetpacks and moon colonies, March 6th and 7th, Fear the Con 2 will be at the exact same location. The things that are different this year is, first off, it's a 2-day con, all day, both days.
Oh, my God.
And secondly, this time we have the whole building, both floors.
Oh, my God.
And no War Machine players allowed? Is that right?
No,
I'm just kidding.
We are definitely having Beer Machine 2.
Yes, that's right. It's going to be very similar to last year. We're going to keep the price very low. I don't have an exact cost, but we're looking at $15, $20 at the most. That's going to get you into both days, all events. All the beer and soda you can drink for as long as it lasts.
You know, if it's 2 days, I might run 2 stupid games instead of just
one.
Wow.
That's awesome.
If you, be the best con ever.
I think that we are going to have to figure out and set a hard rule on Nerf guns.
Oh,
because there's some serious Nerf firepower in 2 hosts with serious Nerf firepower. And I would just hate to see like Nerf darts hitting like War Machine models and breaking them.
So we might have to Nerfing.
No, yes,
Nerf,
but
we have to put up partitions for the War Machine.
We might
those War Machine guys and their figures. Oh,
yeah.
My. You don't want to
You don't want to bruise any War Machine.
No. we might have to limit Nerfing down to certain rooms or maybe do a Nerf event.
I've already been in touch with Stacy. She's going
to Shadowrun LARP.
Oh, my God.
Actually, she got in touch with me and said she will be doing concessions again this year. They did an awesome job last year.
I want the old beer guys again.
I think they're going to be back. When I called to make the reservation, I called up, and mind you, it's been a year, and I've not talked to anyone at Parks and Rec. Call up and said, hey, I'd like to reserve the place. What's the event? I said, well, it's a gaming thing. And by gaming, I don't mean gambling, you know, head off what happened last year. I mean, board game. They're like, oh, yeah, exactly what you had last year. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
They remember us.
Roll out the carpet, baby.
So if you missed Fear the Con 1, do not miss Fear the Con 2. Fear the Con 1 was an unbelievable time. It was an awesome.
It was a wonderful time.
Outstanding success.
It was merely a preview
of
Fear the Con 2.
And if you came to Fear the Con 1, then you know how it went down. I hope, you know, I never heard from anyone they had a bad time. So definitely make a point to be back for Fear the Con 2. We've got space for more people. We're going to be doing 2 days of events. I have not decided on which game I'm going to run yet. I've already been asked and agreed to run a Transformers game using the rules I'm always talking about. So I will at least run that.
We're also, since we're spreading it out over 2 days, if you went last year, it was solid gaming. And the transition from game to game was like 10 minutes, and it was just solid game. This year, since it's 2 days, we haven't worked out the schedules yet, and we're going to spread out the gaming more. Our goal is to actually have like panels and to do a show at Fear the Con.
Right.
And I don't know what kind of show we're doing, but you know that audience participation, Fear the Boot Live we did at Gen Con, was a hell of a lot of fun, and that might be making a return. So another thing I want to put out there too, this coming week, when I think this show will drop, I could be wrong, I am going to put on the forums that we are going to be taking volunteers to help out at Fear the Con, set up tables, clean things up, help Stacy in the...
And also people to do stuff like run games.
Yes, so. Yes. So all that
running
stuff will
fun.
Be...
The more
all that
you
stuff,
give, the more you get.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So all that stuff will be rolling out within the next week or two.
Right. We will be using the same Warhorn site again. I went through last night and cleaned out all the stuff from Fear of the Con 1. It's not set up for Fear of the Con 2 yet, so don't go out there as of this episode, but probably by the time that next episode, by the time 120 drops, we'll have a place where you guys can go out and start signing up. And
we're not using that stupid Google checkout thing.
No,
again,
we'll be
using
the
PayPal,
built-in PayPal stuff. Yeah. But once again, March 6th and 7th, 2009, you definitely want to be there. It was a blast last year, and I can't wait to do it again. Now, getting back to what I was saying about coming out of 1995, on my way home from signing the contract to get the location, I stopped by my local gaming store and decided to go and pick up Hunter the Vigil, just to see how it measures up against Hunter's Hunted. Now, I've not had
You've gone from 1980s gaming to 1990s gaming.
No, Hunter the Vigil was released at Gen Con.
Yeah, I know. So, I know. But it's White Wolf and it's...
Well, I know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Someone already gave me crap about that. That New World Darkness has been out for several years, which is true. But you know what? I'm coming at least closer.
It's a current system. Yeah.
And right after that, the next thing I'm going to branch out to is I think I'm going to pick up Burning Wheel and Burning Empire.
So Burning Wheel is awesome.
I've had them highly recommended to me. So I am going to try and dig myself a little bit out of the dark ages of gaming.
Good. I had a topic come up in my mind earlier after I was commenting on my self-destructive playstyle. And it speaks more to the root of what the purpose of gaming is, and I think you all probably have opinions on it. Is gaming collaborative storytelling for the sake of a greater plot, or is it a mishmash of individual hero fantasies in which you project an ideal version of yourself and do great, crazy stuff?
Well,
I'd go with the first one personally, but I don't think the second is wrong.
Okay.
I just lean towards the first.
Asking, I lean more toward the second, too.
Asking what gaming is kind of like asking what fun is.
Well, yeah, I'm not asking for an all-encompassing definition of gaming. I just want to get your opinions on that attribute, because I don't think it's one or the other. Yeah, for you.
For me, it's definitely number one.
Yeah.
I think for some people, it's number two. For some people, I'd actually add a number three if it's a competition.
Okay, yeah, that's there.
But for me,
I'm speaking strictly
unquestionably number one
into the role play aspect.
Yeah, for
not
me,
the dice rolling.
I come for the story.
Yeah.
And I can sit in a game where my character sucks and I do very little. And certainly, I don't want my character to suck and I don't want to do very little. But if the story's great, I will walk out of there.
See, I think part of the reasons why my characters always suck and do nothing is that I'm rebelling against the second option.
Yeah.
This idea that gaming should just be you're the badass every time.
Yeah.
You're perfect.
That it has to be this. Why does gaming have to be an action? Why does it? The genre of action. Why does it have to be a shoot 'em up action?
Well,
heroes
action
burst in
necessarily. It's why do all the characters have to all be perfect?
Yes.
Why is everyone always beautiful and smart and invincible?
Why
and
is
strong?
The only disadvantages that a person has to get advantages?
Yeah,
you know, it's,
you know, and that's not in every system either. I, you know, the mm-hmm. the whole, you know, taking disadvantage to get advantages or whatever you are going to call it, they actually don't have that in all systems. I know, like in, you know, second edition mm-hmm. D&D, which is why I did the bulk of my playing in growing up, that's not in there really, unless I was just completely missing.
No, it's
aspect.
Not in there. It's not in a lot of systems. It's a very, just, very common GM horse trading practice.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it because it's fun for
everyone. And I understand it. And it, like you said, it's cool. Mm-hmm. But, and I was just to say, to throw on my part, I think that a lot of players do fall into the number two, a lot of groups maybe, just because.
I made it number two for a
reason. Well, there you go. But, and maybe that's just when you start out, whenever you're like a newer player, I think it's more of that. It's the self-glorification kind of a thing. And then And also, I think in further understanding what you meant by your first part, the collaborative storytelling, I think that comes a little bit later, too, is I think at first it's just basically it's more your GM telling the story. You're participating in it, but I don't know how much of it you would actually be, you know, building on and making, you know, adding your own part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I know what you mean.
I think that when I first heard what you said, I was reacting to it that way.
Like,
definitely like the number one. That's what I strive for.
Yeah, what I'm wondering with leaning in the number one is, am I just dressing the same sort of escapism up in slightly different clothes so that I can claim I'm innocent of it?
No, because I remember like when I first started playing Savage Worlds with Luke, and I made my first Savage Worlds character, and he was like, oh, you got to take maximum disadvantages so that you can get all these advantages. And I'm like, I don't want all these advantages and you know, I don't want all these powers and stuff. It doesn't really fit with the character concept I'm going for. And he's like, no, that's how you make the character cool. And
Savage Worlds, you kind of have to, because it's particularly a starting character. If you don't take the disadvantages, your character cannot do crap.
I totally disagree.
The concept of gaming is explosions every minute, whether good explosions or bad explosions. And I think
my point to Luke was that I make my character cool regardless of what we do with these rules and stuff. You know, I guess the rules are there to represent what I'm trying to do, but that's a totally different argument.
You know, let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
In that game, it was one where you had to take all the combat abilities to get ahead, and I didn't take any, and I got way ahead because I used the brain.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a second, and throw something out that I understand and I sympathize with, but this is not my stance. This was actually presented to me by someone I used to game with years ago. What he said to me was, I don't want to make characters that are crappy or weak or have disadvantages because I spend my whole life struggling with problems, struggling with disadvantages, dealing with crap.
So I don't when have I that sit problem. Down at I'm the
gaming,
awesome.
Well, when I sit down at the gaming table, his way of escape was being the hero that he can't be in real life.
Right. And the fundamental question is that gaming in a nutshell? Is that the purpose of what we do?
I think escapism is the purpose of gaming in a nutshell. Yeah. To each person, escapism means something different. I mean, even non-gamers, they escape through books or movies or walks in the park.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know somebody who, like, is a hero. You know, like a fireman. Somebody who, in a real active precinct, who goes and, I mean, they're pulling people out of burning buildings every single day. And then when they go back to the firehouse and they're playing with their fireman buddies, do they play the hero that slays the dragon?
You know,
or do they do the escape?
They probably got plenty of stress in real life.
Well, I was going to say, that's a good question, or it's a good topic. And I'll give you the answer. It's real easy. Watch Rescue Me on FX. That's a perfect example. I mean, it's a show about it's a Dennis Leary show about firemen, and it shows them in their real life, and that basically that they have tough lives, and it's really stressful. It's a good. I mean, I like it in the fact it's a good show by itself, but you also see that, you know, these guys, these heroes, they're normal guys just like everybody else. They've got the normal problems, if not more so, probably more so even than normal people because of what they go through. Yeah. So yeah, it ain't easy being a hero. And I have no idea.
Did you say an hero?
And I did, an hero.
You beetard.
Yes, I am.
Wow, I did not peg you for the title.
I didn't mean to. I made a mistake. It's not easy being a hero.
Well, if you
not
do that, hero. An hero. I've never said it. What's an history?
I don't speak that way. An internet meme fad for someone who kills himself. I guess you don't.
I don't know that.
Okay.
No.
I thought you read 4chan, and I was like, nope. Pat. You are not a 15-year-old anime nerd. What is up?
Oh, that's Chad. That's true.
Chad would read 4chan, but even you probably wouldn't read 4chan.
No. Yeah, see, I just was, yeah, just and a you simple was Chad error, in that grammatical case. Error.
I can read some 4chan.
I used to do 4chan. I had a point here a minute ago, and I totally forgot
what it was. We were talking about the real-life heroes and how they escape.
Oh, yes.
None of us can... actually answer that question because we're all four pretty boring people.
Escapism thing, it's just like, I think role-playing is sort of like, you know, going to see a movie. You do it for entertainment and sort of escapism. It's just like the fact that I like to see movies that have sort of they're fun and they have a good ending. I hate movies that have like tragic, depressing, like weird endings, sort of like, you know, like Normal Life, like a movie. And I've not seen it, but I would not want to see the movie The Perfect Storm because it's about real life and they all die at the end. Oh, sorry if that's a spoiler for anybody, but there's no uplifting thing about it at the end where you feel better than you did going in.
What if it's
ambiguous? I think a lot of people are that way about, you know,
what if the elevator door closes and you just don't know? Like Blade Runner. Do you like the original cut of Blade Runner more where they just get away for
no reason?
There's
only one correct answer to this question.
Yeah. And by the way, you will get ejected from this podcast forever right now.
Mm-hmm.
That folding chair you're sitting on is loaded
with
an explosive charge.
So what was the question again so that I know how the correct way to answer it?
Original theatrical release of Blade Runner or the director's cut that takes out the stupid voiceover and ending? There was a clue.
I like the original.
Okay, you're fired.
Yeah, well,
and actually,
that was bad.
Actually, I don't know that I have seen. I think I have seen a long time ago.
He just
ago,
doesn't
but,
know.
Okay.
No, we can correct this.
No, it's like the six-hour cut of Dune. How many people here have actually seen the six-hour cut of the original Dune?
And that's
okay,
too,
50%.
Yes, me. I'm a huge Dune fan.
I'm a huge Dune fan too, but
we don't even want to get into the whole.
Let me put to you this way:
that thing is horrible.
The movie doesn't follow the books, and it's to me the movie is like its own sci-fi. It's a good sci-fi movie, but yeah, it poops all over the story. But whenever I read the Dune novels. And I see Paul Atreides Muad'Dib in my head. I see Kyle MacLachlan.
I know what you're going to say. That's a downfall.
I don't think it's bad. I think his portrayal.
I didn't mean a downfall. I did the same thing with the Jack Ryan series, Tom Clancy's books. I didn't start reading them until before I saw Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan. And then, of course, he did one movie and then didn't do anything else. But so I read that whole series and I could never picture him as anything except Alec Baldwin.
That happened to me in Lord of the Rings.
Really?
And I found this bar in Rome that's Lord of the Rings themed, and it was made and decorated before the movies came out.
Mm-hmm.
So all their pictures were just drawings of characters, and I thought, this is amazing. The movie characters aren't the book characters at a one-for-one level, and of course you know that, but you don't think it.
That
guess what I'm doing right now? Well, not right this
podcasting.
Second podcasting, but if you listen to the show like way, way, way back when, I mentioned that I have never read Lord of the Rings.
Yes. Uh-huh. You're reading Lord of the Rings?
Yes.
Finally?
Yes,
oh my
I am.
God, thank you.
And I have to thank one of our forum members, and I don't remember his forum name, but I do remember his real name because his real name is Chad, as you know, like
why would
mine.
You remember that?
I don't know.
Well, it's weird. A country.
Yeah,
oh, that's
because it's
true.
A big country and a lake and a river.
So he'd know somebody that was Jordan as well.
Yeah,
like
this
Robert
guy.
I know a Jordan.
Yeah.
This guy PMs me on the forums and he's like, yeah, I'm listening to all the old episodes. And he's like, I can't believe you've never read Lord of the Rings.
He actually sent me the same
PM. Either.
I almost don't want to be your friend.
He sent me the same
PM.
You
are reading it though.
So. And you know what my response was?
What?
And this is going to sound ridiculous, but I swear this is true. Every time I go out to get a copy, I can't.
Really?
You like, can't find a copy of the Lord of the Rings?
Let me explain this. Hear me out.
I go to a hardware store, and they're not selling it.
That's like next to the
even though they sell Harry Potter.
And the magazines at the checkout aisle.
Here's the thing. How much?
I want to hear your answer. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm one of those people. I hate going out and shopping. I do all my stuff on the internet.
Oh, you can't find Lord of the Rings on the internet.
Yes. Let me explain. So here's what happened. So I have this on my birthday and Christmas list. Because my family, we do that. We don't surprise each other with gifts we don't want. We actually make out lists of what we want that other people buy from. Okay, just where our family works. I've had on my birthday and Christmas list for years. And I have gotten...
So it's not that you can't find it. No,
I'm not done with the story yet. This is step one.
Do you need me to just go out and buy you this?
I was gonna say,
after
I know,
whatever
I
you
have,
get you.
I have a copy
in my truck that I'm reading.
Oh,
I can give that
have,
to you and pick one up for myself.
I have my reading copy. Sorry to break it on you. Sorry. I have my reading copy.
Yeah, no, I'm never
going to
finish this
explanation.
Nobody really
I have at least
cares.
Three or maybe four. Because
it is ridiculous.
Awesome.
Of the Lord of the
but
Rings.
But the fact it's ridiculous is why I think it's interesting.
No, I just have some beat up paperbacks.
It's unbelievable.
Those are the ones I read. And I've read them multiple times.
All right. So there's.
And I've never cracked the binding on any others.
That's
they're
awesome.
They're just special editions.
I would want to read it anyway. Dan, continue. Go ahead.
We might have to cut that little tangent out.
There
was so much. No, just the part where we're talking over each other. So
I don't know.
Yeah. So.
So back to why you don't own.
Right.
I have this copy
on my wish list for a long time. Nobody ever gets it for me. They get me everything else under the sun, which is fine. They got me some fantastic books, but they never get me that one. So then a forum listener basically says, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to get you an Amazon gift card. Go order Lord of the Rings. So I do. I get on Amazon, order Lord of the Rings. About a week goes by. I'm not making this up. They send me an email, cancel the order, saying that book's currently unavailable and out of print.
That might be illegal. That's a breach of contract if my month of legal explanations.
There you go.
Well, they do it all the time, so.
Did they bill your card?
They I don't remember if they refunded it.
I had someone. They refunded it.
They refunded it.
I mean, it was out of stock. I mean, maybe the edition you got was
out of stock.
Now, you're probably going to get 4 or 5 copies.
Well, you know,
Christmas
that's
now,
what I said to this.
I'm probably going to get you one myself.
What I said to this Chad guy is the obvious thing I need to do is get off my ass, drive down the street. There's a Borders and a Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, that Barnes and Noble
directly
is
across from each other,
3 minutes from your house,
and just walk in and buy one off the shelf. But I'm the type of guy, I hate going shopping. I do.
We drove past
online.
It twice going to Steak and Shake today. You should have told me this.
I know.
I would have let you stay in the car.
See, he would have gotten it for you.
All right, I'm going to take care of that though. While I'm taking care of my.
I think the original point though is that Chad is actually reading The Lord of the Rings now.
I am.
So
how
far in you? Yes, where are you? See, we'll be able to know.
About 100-ish pages.
So you're lurking around the shadow
Frodo,
of the past.
Frodo just left. Bilbo took over Baggins, and he's... Or was it the other way around?
I don't think Bilbo
leaves.
Bilbo leaves.
Frodo, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm getting back to your previous point, though. Movies definitely do change my perceptions of books. That having seen the Lord of the Rings movies and having read The Hobbit, every time that Bilbo came up, I pictured the Bilbo from the movies.
I don't.
And that is the reason why I also do not like the idea of Chronicles of Narnia series, because they are extremely minimalist and non-descriptive with the intention that you will personalize what you see, feel, hear, smell. And the fact that the movies now solidify that and portray it so specifically,
as
I think takes something away.
British perceptions.
I think some,
but it is the period that you are working in.
Right. Yeah. But I still think it takes something away from the enjoyment of Chronicles of Narnia because Lewis describes almost nothing. And I believe from having read his nonfiction, that was quite intentional because he was an existentialist. And so for the movies to be made and kind of take that element of imagination away, I think it's kind of destructive to the experience of reading the books. And I'm glad I read the Chronicles of Narnia before I saw the movie.
I always recommend, if anybody, you should absolutely read the books of whatever movie they make out of beforehand. I mean, that's just a given. But in the case of the Lord of the Rings, I think at least at that one, it was very well done. And I think that even if you hadn't read it, if you do have that perception of the characters from the movies, I think you're still pretty good because me being the, you know, super fan that I am, I was very happy with what they did. I don't think I have a gripe at all about any of the characters.
You know what's really weird?
From the movies.
Carla was listening to the books on tape of the Harry Potter series.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, those were started before the movies were made. Now, I realize the run of the two have overlapped, but those were started.
The books? The books on tapes.
The books on tapes.
I'm sure they were.
Were started before the movies were made.
I think the guy who reads them is pretty famous.
He's a very famous voice actor. He's in the Guinness Book World Records for being able to do more distinct voices than anyone else alive. Here's what's weird about it.
That?
Have you listened to the tapes?
I have not.
They sound exactly like the characters in the movie.
Really?
It's really, really weird.
The only reading of that I've heard is a YTMND site where they edit clips together to make it sound like he's pleasuring himself in his room during book one, and like he gets Hedwig to cover it up or something. It's perfect audio editing. We'll have to link to it.
You're gonna have to. I'm gonna link that in the show notes, John. You give me that link. That's hysterical.
Oh my.
Probably not safe for work, but hysterical.
No, totally unsafe for work. There's no obscenity in it, but
it's
put
really
it
weird how the guy seriously made this before the movies, and yet he sounds exactly. There's no difference. Nothing about the movie could ruin this.
It's cool.
Nothing is wrong with the Harry Potter movies. The Harry Potter movies got me into the books. I watched movie 3 and I was like, okay, I was a Lord of the Rings snob. I dismissed Harry Potter out of hand as kiddie book crap, but now I'm going to read it because it's just fun. And
I did the same thing, and I remember initially I was like, no, I have no interest in this, and I don't remember what it was that got me into it, but it's a totally different experience. Like you said, you can, you know, Lord of the Rings fans are still, you know, that's still our
Lord of the Rings still runs so much wider and deeper than Harry Potter.
Absolutely.
Does.
But you know what it is?
But
for me, I'm excited with the Harry Potter books, like, you know, for my son. You know, he's 2 right now, obviously, so we're not. But, you know, the experience of getting him into it, it's a good stepping stone. I mean, because these are, you know, they're obviously written for younger. And I think it's even better than like
Hobbit. The first couple are written pretty younger.
Well, this is true. But I think they're easier for kids to read even than, so say, The Hobbit. And The Hobbit's a good kid's story, but it's still.
Love
you're still
Hobbit.
Shirting.
Have you seen the trailer?
Told, like 12 to 14.
For numbers. For
I have not seen it yet.
It's freaking outstanding. I've enjoyed the Harry Potter movies, but.
Oh, I'm sorry. The next Harry Potter
I've
book.
Never,
The Hobbit.
No. Have you seen the trailer for the next Harry Potter movie? Because enjoyed all of them, but I've never really been excited like, oh, when Batman's coming out, I gotta be there on opening night and this, that, and the other, counting down the days. Never been like that with Harry Potter. That trailer, that has me excited. I'll try to link that off the show.
I was at opening night for books 6 and 7 and movies 4 and 5.
Okay, let's pretend that we actually do a role-playing game podcast here and get into something.
John, put on your Harry Potter hat.
Okay.
He's got his helmet right there.
These are kind of angular Harry Potter glasses.
We can get you some tape and you can perfect there.
Actually, you are kind of wearing Harry Potter glasses.
I've been photoshopped into Harry Potter years ago, and I couldn't find it because there's been a forum crash since then. But I used to be Harry Potter on Smelly Cat before I took over and purged everyone who said that. All right, so what's the role-play topic?
All right, so the role-playing topic today is we're going to continue the pseudo-series that we started last time on archetypes and super archetypes or professions and roles or whatever phrase we end up using. We interchange our words so often that we confuse ourselves. So
no, this exists. Tycho talked about it in a Penny Arcade news post.
Do your name's actually properly pronounced Tycho?
Really? No.
Yeah. Tycho Brahe.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure this has changed everyone's life that my level of
that is actually named after someone too, not just made up name. Yeah, like some astronomer.
Yeah, it's an astronomer.
Guy. Yeah. Weird guy.
I'm sure people really care. So moving right along, we talked last time about the super roles, the kind of archetype within an archetype. Yeah,
not the tank, healer, DPS, whatever.
But more like the protector, the mother, the explorer.
The quartermaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what we want to talk about this time.
I think we hit on that too.
Is
I hit on Always it. Sunny.
Two things.
Nice. Yeah, that's a slow pitch. The wild card. Somebody hit it.
The muscle.
What we're going to talk about this time is two things. And I think we're going to get through them both. If we don't, then we'll just do the next one in 120. The next place we're going with this is when the game master assigns roles.
Yes.
And this could go either way. This could be professions or this could be that super archetype. But when the game master assigns roles, now I have tried this in games in the past, and there's two ways I've done it. There's sort of a hard way and a soft way. The hard way is where I tell the players, I'm going to hand you a character, personality, template, everything.
That's wretched.
I've done this at con games because you.
All right, at con games.
Con games, you kind of have to because you don't want to sit there for 6 hours doing character creation when you have a 4 hour slot to play. The second way that I've done is more of a soft way of saying, these are the things I think ought to be represented within the party to succeed in this game, but I don't care who plays what. The latter way has always worked out very well. It's been a great way of me setting an expectation for the game, kind of making that implicit contract with the players as this is what I need to help my story work. The first way of I'm just going to give you an envelope and in there may be a character who has a profession and a personality and a role that violates every rut and tradition that you use. I have never gotten a gaming group yet that has not defecated kittens when I even bring up the idea.
Yeah.
The only person I've got to even sign on to the idea is Chad.
Well, I just pooed on the idea, not because I'm guarding my role as the suicidal fat ass, but because part of the fun is making the character. You got to be able to design your own role.
Would you take it a step farther than that to say that part of the fun is not just making the character, but being the character?
Well, of course it is.
I mean, the catharsis of playing out the character.
Yeah, well, that's what making the character. I mean, choosing what you get to play. That's what I meant. Not rolling stats.
I think you're talking about a more, say, an advanced type of a setting. Like what you're saying, throwing out a character, saying, you play this. It's like, you know, saying, going to somebody that's been role-playing for a long time and they're really good at it and like, okay, let's try it. Let's do an advanced experiment where we do this. I think you look at it more along those lines. That being said, I sort of agree with John. I think when you get those that are canned like that, it does take something away from it where I, as a person, I would rather be able to make up my own character, come up with that, and then take your soft advice of we need these roles defined. And then it's among the party, you know, they sort of, you know, the players decide who's going to be what, but then I guess I question, is that really a GM assigned roles? If you're just saying these are the roles that I think we need to have assigned.
Well, that's why I described it as soft. Because they're not dictated, but nonetheless, if the role you want to play is not on that list and you have just enough people to cover those roles, there's four players and four roles. Mm-hmm. Then to some extent, I mean, now you've got some wiggle room. That's why I called it sort of a soft assignment. But I guess really what it comes down to is kind of what John was talking about earlier, which is what brings you into role playing games. Now, I agree with what you're saying, Pat. I personally get a huge amount of enjoyment out of imagining the character, creating the character, and excuse my reuse of the word, but the catharsis of playing the character. But I also, to some extent, see role-playing as this very pseudo-academic exploration of other perspectives, of other personalities, of other people.
Yeah, I do too.
And so I would not object to doing that some of the time.
My thing is, I wouldn't want to do it all the time, but I think it's an interesting experiment to do. But yeah, I enjoy making a character and coming up with my own character. But yeah, I think it could be fun to do. I think the bigger problem, though, in that is that most players don't want to experiment. They don't want to do something crazy. I mean, if you have a group that does like that, you know, count yourself lucky, because like Dan said, most of the groups I ran into or have played with over the course of the years I've been playing, man, it's just players do not want to branch out. They don't want to try new systems. They don't want to try new genres. They don't want to try new characters. They don't want to try new ways of playing the game. Like, here's the character. What's your interpretation of it? Like I said, I agree with the knocks against that concept of, you know, it takes away player freedom. You want to make your own character, all that. But man, just can we loosen up every once in a while and try different things?
You can mix things up and change it around and still leave the real important, enjoyable power in the player's hands. Right. You can say, okay, we play fantasy every time. Now we're playing sci-fi. Go to town. Here's the Shadowrun book. Here's the Star Wars book. Here's the Star Trek book. Make your little crew or whatever. And that's different. And you still have what's important, which is being able to make your own character.
Yeah. Do you think that not being able to make your own character, and I don't entirely disagree with you. Actually, I do agree with a lot of your points you're making. But do you think that not being able to make your own character is a complete deal breaker for you?
No.
Outside of a concept.
Yeah, this is the thing. There better be a good reason. Because on the sole merits of, on the one hand, I can make a character, on the other hand, I cannot make a character, I would go with I can make a character every time, unless I was facing a time constraint or perhaps a setting game in which we were playing the cast of some movie or book, sure, and I had to be
Harry Potter,
Spock, or Kirk. I couldn't roll up my own red shirt.
Right.
And in that circumstance, I would play a predefined character.
What about a setting that... say the game, it's a game master, completely invented game master setting, and he's just like, here are the characters that you guys are going to play because you don't understand my setting because I haven't explained it to you, and you don't want me to stand there and do a 4-hour lecture on the politics and races and all that sort of stuff. We just kind of want to get into it.
Yeah,
in
learn
game.
By doing.
Well, yeah. The merits of diving headfirst into a sea of proper nouns with someone's homebrew setting that you can't understand are debatable on their own rights.
Right.
But I think even in that case, you could get a history and a set of circumstances and a job and all that without having him say, okay, well, you're grumpy or you don't like the hobbits or
now, I think
whatever.
That, well, I agree with a lot of John's points, and I think that another problem that could come up with having a character handed to you, not just the rules and stats, but you are this, your personality is this, your history. Here's a 2-page typed packet of who your character is, and there's not a single number on it other than your age. But I think the problem with that is that when the player takes it, and the player's all for it, the player's like, yeah, I don't mind doing this experiment, let's go for it. And then they start playing it totally different than how the game master intended.
Well,
and not to be mean, they're not like saying, oh, well, I'm going to screw this experiment up. But I mean, they're just totally interpreting it in a way that the game master didn't expect.
That's what I was going to say, is an interpretation different. I mean, I know we've all had these conversations just because we're geeks and argue about stupid stuff. We watch a movie or read a book.
None of this is stupid. It's deadly serious.
We watch a movie or read a book, and then there's a character. And to one person, that character seemed like this, but to another person, the character seemed like that. Yes. Just because we're imprinting our own experiences and emotions into it or whatever, we take it a little bit different, and there suddenly becomes, we're both reading the same book or watching the same movie, but walking away with very different things. And certainly that can happen where if a game master even hands you a page of personality, a page of background, and a page of stats, and you follow it perfectly, you could still play a character different than what the GM created.
And there's ambiguity from what's on the list. I mean, take Puck, take the Phantom of the Opera. There are characters who are deep and ambiguous that we have in our dramatic traditions that vary wildly just based on how someone sings them or how someone gives a certain monologue.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that. The different Doctor Who's would be another example.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting to see in Star Trek 11, which I think is slated for, what, next year to be released?
I don't think I've watched the past three Star Trek
movies. But it's going to be interesting to see how a whole new cast of people play very well-established old characters.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be daunting.
You know,
it's Star Trek. Nobody takes it serious.
Yeah.
Regarding
they tore down Quarks in Vegas.
Yeah.
I'm pissed.
They tore down the whole Star Trek experience. Yeah. It wasn't just Quarks.
Oh, wow.
Mm. But Quarks was the only thing I went to or cared about.
Regarding the soft character assignments, I actually kind of prefer them. In fact,
now, what do you mean by, because we've gone over a couple of different things. What do you mean by
what I mean
soft
by that is where
assignments?
I'm given parameters. I am not given, here's your character, but I am told that these roles or these professions or these angles need to be covered to make the game work.
You're saying somebody needs to be the healer, somebody needs to be the gun guy.
Maybe, but not necessarily. It could be, for example, we've got a group of people and someone's got to be a fairly friendly guy because I need to have someone who already knows this guy in the plot or something like that. It could be anything. I mean, it could be professions or skills. For example, when I created my character on John's Dragon Realms game, I leveraged my character off of his.
Yep.
Because of the fact that I knew that if I linked my character to his and gave my character skills and a personality and sort of a super archetype that would mesh well with his, that I instantly had a place in the world and a purpose in the world and knew that I would be involved in things that unfolded. And when a game master sets down, this is what I need from you guys, it helps me to really know that the character I create, I'm not going to regret three games later. It's like, holy crap, this guy's worthless. He doesn't fit in. I'm not doing anything with him. I'm all protective, but there's nothing to protect.
You know, I have a twofold comment on that. The first fold is, man, I really hate it when game masters do that. I really hate it when game masters tell me, okay, the party needs a healer. The party needs a gun guy. The party needs this and that. And because it's like, I don't care about any of that. But on the other hand, I think that on a character creation level, not a dice rolling, picking out your archetypes level, but on a personality and background and history and linking the party level, I think that that is absolutely vital to making a good group. Because what you have is you're sitting around, you're making your characters, and I look at Pat and I'm like, Pat, how can we link our two characters? Because we don't want to have five people, which is the gaming group, be completely told different strangers, and then they walk in together, and then they start, you know, it's like, we're an adventure party, hooray, and then they go off and slay dragons.
To the color animal tavern.
Yeah, I mean, not that we haven't played plenty of fun games like that, but, you know, when we're trying something that's a different angle, where we say, okay, we want to be together, we want to be friendly towards each other, we want to have maybe these rivalries, this, and all this is set up before the game goes. The players do that all the time, and then the game master gets pulled into that or pulls himself into that because he has NPCs and story hooks and things. And when you work together on that level, then I think it's really good.
To give an example of how even when the game master doesn't make the soft assignments, I do it myself, how many of the past games that we've run have I intentionally made myself the last person to give a character concept?
I have no idea.
All of them.
Yeah.
On every one of them.
From what I know, which, you know, the last couple.
Apparently you've done well, because no one even pays attention or knows.
But I on all of them, I've waited to see what everyone else is playing, and then I know I can make something that's going to mesh with the party well.
See, I usually spring first, so everyone else has to deal with what I put out.
And you know what? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, because if everyone waited to last like me,
yeah, we'd be screwed.
But that goes back to the super archetype. But yeah, you know, my personality is,
there has to be a first jumper and a last jumper in a gaming group.
My personality is, I like to know that I'm filling a needed role, and I like to know that I'm taking care of the party. And the only way I can do that is if I know what the party is. Chad, getting back to the assigned roles, if we need a tank, we need a healer, we need whatever, I agree with you that I think generally,
I think we need a terminology for that.
Well, I think it takes away a lot of fun when the game master does that, mm-hmm. but there are some games where you can't escape it. I've got this Star Trek thing in front of me And if you want to run a Star Trek game and you have four chiefs of engineering,
yeah, or you can't have five captains on a ship. No. It just does not work.
But some of the traditional computer game archetypes don't even really work in role-playing either. I mean, a tank in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
You can only do so much of that without the GM wink nodding and having all the kobolds attack the fighter.
Yeah, because
there is no aggro.
What are you going to do? I hate thou. I spit on thou kobold mother. Okay, well, they all attack you now. No.
Well, I guess there are some of the skills in there, like in 3.0 and 3.5, like intimidate such that maybe you could use to say you're trying to taunt the person.
Yeah,
to fight
I,
you.
There I never, might be something in bluff that lets you.
I never understood.
I think a tank, though, like you're saying in 3.0 and or just in Dungeons & Dragons in general, is basically you're playing a fighter because the fighter has nothing else. There's like, as far as skills and everything else goes, a fighter is a guy with X weapon of great size and does massive amounts of damage. He has no other skills. He's not diplomatic. He has no healing skills. He's just sort of your tank. And that, for me, that was my first ever definition of a tank. Not, you know, MMO wise. It was just, he's the fighter. He's got the most hit points.
But
he's got the highest armor class. Well, he's going
to
live the longest.
He can block the dungeon hallway to keep the mage from getting killed.
Exactly. I mean, that's just
one out of 100 times, yes. But most of the time, there's just a little gentleman's agreement going on that the paladin gets hit. I guess. I don't do it for my players. I just kill the mage.
Yeah. See, I never understood that. It's like I never understood the hardcore D&D loot, clear loot, kill loot. You know, you just go from room to room killing and looting and there's no plot. I never understood how those games actually worked because I played MMOs and I'm like, you know, you got to have the tank, the healer and all these roles and stuff. And you go in to fight the dragon. It's this big, huge open room or it's a big out in the field. And there's a dragon. He's flying around the dragon. And the game master's like, well, there's the healer. Got to kill him first. And, the dragon just works his way through him.
Mm-hmm. I kick you into whelps. You all die. Let's play Star Wars.
Is it a matter of that players just have to kill the dragon before their soft, squishy counterparts die? I mean,
It depends on your group, who you're playing with, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I know when we would do that, we weren't, you know, it wasn't just room-to-room kill, but we would always try to play smart. Like, you know, you've got your group, you've got your frontline guys, you've got your back of the line guys, you know, your backs, your range support, your mages, whatever else. And they would stay back.
The line typically doesn't stop any character or creature in the D&D world after about level 2.5.
That's true. And I guess it just sort of depends on where you're set up. I mean, yeah, you're right. It is all down to your game master saying, okay, well, yeah, I'm obviously not just going to hop over here and kill their mage first and because that's how I'm going to win. It is kind of a give and take.
I think there are some game masters.
Well,
though,
there are, but I think we're getting to the point of we're in this for the storytelling our aspect of it.
Right.
We're in the fight and this is how we'll have the story fall out.
Kind of the middle road on that where I generally have the enemies fight the front line for the simple reason of, especially with less intelligent creatures.
Yeah, you have to gauge the intelligence of the creatures.
Here's a guy,
orcs will do it. The lich will not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, precisely, yeah. The orcs see a guy with a sword screaming and running at them. They may not even understand that the guy behind him is healing him. You know, and even if you say an orc would, well, certainly like a bear would not. But with the more intelligent creatures, you know, I try to occasionally slip something past the front line just to create a little bit of chaos and drama. But I'm not a vicious, bloodthirsty GM. My goal is not to kill my players or to make them fight.
Well, I'm not vicious or bloodthirsty either, but they better think I am or else there's no fun in winning.
Sure.
Fair enough.
Well, and we always did try to, you know, tactics. We love to, you know, plan out a battle, you know, before we go in. Don't just see, okay, bad guys. All right, you know, Leroy Jenkins, just go, you know, just get some kind of a battle plan. Let's figure out what we're going to do and try to do it smart. And actually, I remember one of the biggest fights that I, not really a fight, but one of the biggest surprises I ever had was in one of these sessions where we were trying to make this plan and we were going to use trip ropes to trip up this group of bandits that were going to come attack us. And all of a sudden this guy that was playing a ranger, he went all, you know, peed on me and said, dude, I'm not going to do that because that hurt the horses. And this is like, we're okay. Dice are ready to roll. Here's our plan. Ashley goes, dude, I'm not going to put those lines up.
If a player at my table said that, it might hurt the horses. Bad things would happen.
I mean, my jaw hit the floor. I couldn't believe this guy's doing this. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
The stampede of necro death horses that show up and claw his eyes out would be 5 minutes in the road.
And in like 30 minutes or whatever, planning out this whole big battle plan. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. not going to hurt the horses. I'm like, I wanted to throttle him.
You know, it was actually, I could probably do a whole episode and just be a rant, so we probably won't ever do this, on how it drives me nuts when people play the eco-terrorist. The
nature, yeah, I hate where that,
they're not just nature-loving, they're nature-psycho, borderline, if not outright, eco-terrorist as a druid or a ranger, but that's just more of a rant.
Yeah. I killed one of Melina's eco-terrorists. Chad, you ran that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always hate the characters.
Well, Chad, not that we made any bet, but it looks like you're going to win because we have just completed an episode. So number three, episode 120, we're going to come back and talk about the leader.
I'm kind of glad we didn't make a bet because I think there's a lot of fluff in this one. The topic was very light.
You know what, though?
It was a fun one.
I had fun doing this episode, and I could be wrong, but I think people are going to have fun listening to it. Mm-hmm. So I feel good about it, and we will come back for leaders in 120.
Yep.
And I guess as your reward, I'll let you hold the screwdriver next episode.
Yay! Stabbing time!
So thank you guys for tuning in, and Chad will stab me next time.
See ya.
Later.
Stab ya!
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.